Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your podcast on all things Warriors. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News. Cool show for you today. I'm going to be joined by the hosts of Locked On Clippers and of Locked On Lakers for my series Taking Stock of the Warriors Competition in the West. With the offseason pretty much over, I think this is going to be a good way to catch up with what the other teams have done and are doing and what their expectations are this season. So we'll start with the Clippers, then get to the Lakers. Enjoy.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm here now with Charles Mockler, the host of Locked On Clippers. Charles, thanks for jumping on here. I know that the Clippers spent the offseason basically bringing back their guys, right? They re-signed Kawhi Leonard. That was the biggest move that they could have possibly done. They bring back Reggie Jackson. They bring back Serge Ibaka. But the biggest change was the acquisition of Eric Bledsoe. What do you make of that trade? And does that really move the needle?
So I think the Eric Bledsoe trade, it obviously hurts to see a fan favorite and someone who did so much for the organization when things were looking pretty bleak for a couple periods, like Pat Bev. Like, that just hurts for sure. I think the Eric Bledsoe trade is made from an availability standpoint. In a vacuum, in a world with no injuries, sure, I would probably much rather have Patrick Beverley on this Clippers team. He knows the squad. He's a better shooter. He's a borderline better defender, push defender. But unfortunately, he has to deal with injuries, and he just couldn't stay healthy, which isn't his fault. Obviously, if you're real Clippers fans out there, really don't like our training staff, so maybe some of the blame's there. But I think it's an availability trade. I think where Ty Lue uses him is going to be very interesting. We've seen Ty Lue kind of do these 10-game tinkers with lineups. When Lou Williams was still on the team, he did a three-guard lineup with Reggie Lou and Luke Kennard for 10 games, which did not go well. So I'm not sure if it's a needle mover now. I think for the playoffs it is, just based on pure availability. And I think he's going to have, he has some better shooters around him than he did previously. So I'm excited to see what Ty Lue does. I think it can be a needle mover, but those first 15 games are really going to tell us, a good portion of what we will know for how Ty Lue is going to maximize Bledsoe's value.
Speaking of availability, when is Kawhi Leonard expected back?
As well as I do, I think we're all going to know that Kawhi is back when he's just warming up in a full, warm-up suit one day for the Clippers pregame. There's been pics of him on vacation. He doesn't have a brace on the knee. Obviously, I don't know if you've seen it, but the scar is pretty gnarly from the surgery. But Kawhi takes his time, right? This could be anywhere from maybe the Clippers are in a great position. He comes back the last month of the season to get in shape for the playoffs, or maybe things maybe don't go as well. And it's like, well, do we really want Kawhi to come back if things aren't at full championship, level of play from the Clippers? So I don't know. I'm expecting him to be out a good portion of the season, though.
What would be a reasonable expectation for the Clippers without Kawhi? Like, where do you think that they should be until when Kawhi does eventually get back?
So I think that a top, I think a 3-4 seed is very much doable. The schedule for the Clippers this year, and I'm sure you'll hear this from every single host of another show that you talk about, is pretty brutal. The NBA really didn't do the Clippers any favors. I think they have more instances of 5 games and 7 nights than like 7 teams combined. We have 5 instances of 5 games and 7 nights, which is insane. The front portion of our schedule is really loaded with home games. So really this first month and a half, the Clippers got to, I know it sounds weird to say, make up some ground when the ground is still being made by everyone else, but they need a cushion. If everything goes well, I think they can be a 3-4 seed for sure, and absolutely a contender to make it to the Western Conference Finals. But we saw what this team did last year. The heart is going to be there. But when you're down a player like Kawhi, it's difficult. Last time that Paul George was the number one option, he had his best season ever with the Thunder. He was, top three in MVP voting. So we hope that form returns. And if that form from Paul George returns, then I think it's a very legitimate, home court advantage in the playoffs team. And then when the playoffs start with a team like the Clippers and this heart that they have, who knows what's going to happen in a good way.
And you mentioned the beginning of the schedule there. I know that the Clippers help the Warriors open up the season at Chase Center, October 21st. That's the Chase Center home opener there. I know that game stands out to me as a pretty good barometer. Obviously, the Clippers will be without Kawhi. The Warriors are going to be without Klay Thompson, and as they have been for 2 years now. But I do think despite those absences, both teams right away are going to get a pretty good sense. Because to me, if both teams are healthy by the playoffs, like those kinds of teams are kind of, the Warriors and the Clippers are kind of neck and neck to me in the Western Conference. If you know, everything plays out well for both teams, but that's going to be an interesting barometer earlier in the season. Is there anything you were watching for in that game?
Whew, man, with these early games, I mean, last season we played the team across the hall, I think like three times before Christmas, which was like, all right, we get some early barometers for this test. I think with the Clippers, you know a little more what you're getting than with the Warriors, right? Because we're literally running every single person back except for Pat Bev, and we replaced it with someone who's going to play a similar role. So I think it'll be just, we want to see that Nick Batum's still moving well after his great Olympics run. We want to see Marcus Morris moving well. Paul George being assertive right out the gate will be a big thing for Clippers fans. And the defense, it's going to be, we're kind of in the dark about what our center rotation in terms of health is going to look like. I assume that Zubats will be ready for the first part of the season. Not really sure about Serge Ibaka. So, you know, shifty guards are something that gave the Clippers problems all last year. So what, you know, why not test it with the shiftiest, best point guard in the league on opening week?
Well, you mentioned a few different things there, but one of the things I wanted to ask you, what you think is the biggest X factor for the Clippers this year? And is it among those things that you're talking about?
I think the biggest X factor is, you know, the biggest elephant in the room, which is how far can Paul George carry this team with a full squad? Clippers are going to go as far as Paul George takes us. I think another thing to look for is the development from Terrence Mann. Year two, Terrence Mann was a completely different player from his rookie year. If you watch the playoffs, we all saw what he did against Utah. Yeah. He can step up in the moment. He knows how to score. He can get to the rim. He can defend multiple positions. This is a big year for him. He could end up being in this starting lineup, and the pressure is going to be on. With Kawhi out, there's a lot of room. You know, there's space for other guys to step up, and Terrence Mann can absolutely do that. But, you know, we're going to need someone else to step up in terms of scoring other than Paul George. You know, Marcus Morris is going to have to do well too, but there's a lot of ground to be made up, and I think Terrence Mann can do it. So I'd put him as my X factor.
And then I think the biggest win from the Clippers for this offseason was just, you know, obviously the Paul George extension kicks in this year. They got Kawhi back on a 4-year deal there. So you keep your guys. And I think a lot of people see that as maybe them extending their window, right? You take a little bit of a pressure off because the threat of them leaving is no longer there. But with that said, still, I mean, is it championship or bust this year? I guess I'm asking you. Is it championship or bust this year for the Clippers?
Man, after the run last year, getting the Western Conference Finals, if someone said that it was, I would have a hard time arguing against it, but I don't think it is. We're down such a major contributor. We're down a top three player in the league in Kawhi Leonard. I don't think it's championship or bust. I think championship or bust comes, I think that's for the entire tenure of Paul George and Kawhi, if that makes sense, but maybe not necessarily this season. But I mean, I think it's close to Western Conference Finals or bust.
If by the end of the Kawhi Paul George tenure, 4 years from now, you have won one championship, considering where the Clippers have come from, right? And under like the Donald Sterling thing, joke of the league, all that to this point. But at this point, you still have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Would it be a disappointment? Would it be a success in your eyes if they come away from this whole thing with just one title?
It's absolutely a success. I can't speak to what it feels like for your favorite basketball team to win a title, because we've never been close except for last season. And even then it was still, you know, down short. But I think for Clippers fans, if you've been following this team for a long time, if we got a chip out of this, I mean, if it happens before the new arena, even better. If it happens in the new arena, fantastic. But yeah, I mean, I wish I could speak to the experience of what it feels like to win a championship for your favorite basketball team, but I think it would be considered a success.
That's Charles Mockler, the host of Locked On Clippers. Thanks for coming on, buddy. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Guys, there are a few things in life that just aren't fun to talk about, and one of them is excessive sweating. You know, when you're sweating through your shirts for no reason at all, it's embarrassing, isn't it? But the only way to solve the problem is to admit that you have a problem. For me, I sweat a ton. There are some days when I'll go through 3 shirts in a day. Seriously. Look, I know this isn't life and death, and there are much worse problems in the world, but let's be honest, in the moment, it feels like a big deal. Nobody likes to sweat a ton during an important speech, during an interview, or God forbid, a first date. I'd much rather not worry about it. That's why I use SweatBlock antiperspirant wipes. SweatBlock is stronger and more effective than most clinical antiperspirants. You simply apply it the night before, go to bed, and then the next morning, you wake up, wash, and go about your day without worrying about sweat, guaranteed. I know this is going to sound too good to be true, but I literally only have to use SweatBlock once or twice a week, and it keeps me dry the whole time. No more pitting out, no more picking my shirts based on which one will hide the sweat better. If you or someone you love is dealing with this, you have to check out SweatBlock. Get it today for 20% off at sweatblock.com with the promo code LOCKEDON or at Amazon and CVS. It's that time of year again, and all eyes are now turned to football as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. And as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all of the pro and college football action this season. Get all of the updated odds, props, and contests, including the internet's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor contest, open now at BetOnline. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. That means they are going to match your initial deposit with a welcome bonus. Be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo. Make a bet on Thursday's September 9th season opener between the Super Bowl champion Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using that promo code NFL100. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports, from football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the great offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
I'm here now with Andy and Brian Kamenetsky of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thanks, guys, for taking the time to join me today. And when we talk about the Lakers, the headliners are LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Assuming that they're healthy, the Lakers should be right there at the top of the conference, right there at the top of the league. And then the big move that they made, obviously, was acquiring Russell Westbrook. And the big question that people have, how is Russell Westbrook going to fit with LeBron and Anthony Davis? I'm sure you guys have talked about this and thought about this every single day since the Westbrook trade went down. What are your thoughts?
It's weird, actually. We haven't. It's like we were saving it. We've been saving this topic for the show. God, you know, I know Andy and I don't know. I mean, I can see visions of how this works really well. We're just sort of the overwhelming star power of it. I think there are certain things that Russ will give them that are absolutely going to benefit the Lakers. You know, they're going to run more. You have Russell Westbrook igniting the fast break. You're going to be much better. When they won the title 2 years ago, the Lakers were a good fast break team. They got a lot of points that way. It kind of mitigated some of their problems in the half court, and Russ will definitely help that. He'll definitely help with the non-LeBron minutes in terms of providing not just a guy who can put up points, but somebody who can really move the ball around and distribute and do those types of things. And the Lakers have been awful when LeBron doesn't play. And so yeah, they had to figure that out. You know, was it a lot of problem solving there to bring in Russell Westbrook to do these sorts of things? Yes. Does it create, you know, certain potential problems in the half court that they're going to have to figure out how to get around? It hurts them defensively. All that stuff's true. And so I wish I had a better answer than I don't know. But I mean, Andy, do you have a better one?
I mean, I think the floor for the Lakers raised tremendously, mm-hmm. just because the talent that Russell Westbrook brings and that tenacity and the intensity and his ability to make a lot of other guys around him better has been really well proven. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of benefits from having him out there. You know, Brian touched upon the non-LeBron minutes, but I think one potential upside to Russ being there isn't just the idea that he can take over some of those minutes and, you know, run an offense, that sort of thing. I think he is about as close to stylistically having LeBron on the floor without LeBron. And I think, you know, the offense the Lakers have run the last couple of years has basically been LeBron which is, you know, not unusual. It's been that way for LeBron for most of his career. But when you're talking about that level of talent and that style, it can become very difficult to keep continuity. And I think Russ offers the best chance at just pure continuity without LeBron on the floor that can hopefully just allow you to keep serve. And just keeping serve in those LeBron-less minutes would be a major upgrade for the Lakers in terms of the LeBron AD era. I also think a lot of this is honestly in Russ's hands. You know, how much is he willing to commit to being at minimum a neutral defensive presence? You know, how much is he willing to commit to moving off ball continually and creating utility for himself when he doesn't have the ball? Because there's been so much focus, the idea of, well, what's he going to do? He's not a spot up threat. He doesn't space the floor. That is all true. But if that's your role for Russell Westbrook off the ball, you're doing it wrong anyway. But the idea of Russell Westbrook in constant motion, potentially being fed on the run, that can scramble a defense, especially when you got a guy like LeBron who can find him. You know, Anthony Davis is reasonably good at finding guys, but that's a lot of that's in Russell's hands. And ultimately, you know, that commitment from him, I think, can raise the ceiling for this team more as opposed to just the floor.
Yeah, look, I've been a little bit more bullish on the Russell Westbrook addition and fit than a lot of people, I think, because, look, I get that there was the Russell Westbrook thing and then there was the Buddy Hield thing, right? And that kind of became the debate, and that Buddy Hield is a better fit. And as many flaws as Russell Westbrook has, and there are several that you guys just, you know, enumerated, but he's a better player than Buddy Hield. I just think he is. He's more impactful. He plays with much more
force. It's not even debatable.
And I think that, you know, NBA Twitter and, you know, analysts and people whose job it is to think about this and discuss these things and talk and all of that, I just think that there's a little bit of a fit fetish happening among those types of people where, oh my God, trade Ben Simmons for any shooter because a shooter would fit better with Joel Embiid. And it's like, okay, well, it's at some point talent wins out and talent figures things out. And I'm not saying fit does not matter, but at some point you just take the talent and then you figure some stuff out later on. And we've seen LeBron do that time and time again with several different kinds of players, co-stars and things like that. And I also look at, for example, what the Warriors' problem was last year. A lot of Warriors fans, oh, we got to go make a trade for a fourth star. Got to go get another suit. You got to go get Bradley Beal. You got to go get Damian Lillard. I don't think the Warriors' problem last year was lack of star power. They have Steph Curry. They have Draymond Green. Klay Thompson's coming back. Their problem was lack of depth and not getting healthy. This offseason, I think they addressed that. We'll see if they effectively addressed it, but they at least addressed it. With the Lakers, nobody is doubting that they don't have enough star power. Nobody is doubting that they don't have the talent. They just need that talent, LeBron and AD, to stay healthy. And I think having Westbrook there, who is as stable a presence night to night as anybody in the league, would help take some of that stuff off of LeBron and AD's plate and potentially keep them healthy for the stretch run in the postseason. So I think they address that need. And I think the fit stuff might figure it out. It's going to be a fascinating experiment, but this is not a whole Russell Westbrook thing. There are some other things that I want to talk to you guys about, namely those other additions, because they basically flipped over the entire roster. They didn't get shooting with Russell Westbrook, but instead they got shooting everywhere else. What were your thoughts on the other offseason moves that the Lakers made?
I think it's hard to separate them. I mean, because the moves that they made were all in the context of you've now traded for Russell Westbrook. You know, you given up, you know, a lot of your defensive integrity with Kyle Kuzma and particularly Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. You've let Alex Caruso go, who, you know, functionally becomes part of that trade. You know, another huge part of their defense. And the choice that you make to trade Westbrook or trade for Westbrook is the you know, sort of the force behind all the other stuff that you're doing. I like the moves that they made. I don't think they brought in anybody that doesn't make sense, or they spent their money the wrong way. We got a show coming up all about Kendrick Nunn. I love that signing. I think that at $5 million, I think that's a bargain. I like that they brought in, you know, Malik Monk, who is a bit of a wild card, I think, but still a great thing to, you know, a a flyer at a million plus or whatever they're going to pay him. He solves a need. Kent Bazemore theoretically can be a two-way player for them, and they badly need him to be that. You know, I mean, they need the guy who shot 40%, 41%, whatever it was last year, and can play both sides of the ball. The problem is, like, they did trade a lot of their sort of two-way potential. And so it's going to be on Frank Vogel to figure out, how do we get, you know, the most out of the big three and surround them with people that can play enough defense to make this work? Like, you know, are you going to be relying on a 36, 37 year old Trevor Ariza to play significant minutes for you in fourth quarters throughout the season and into the playoffs? I mean, that could be a bit of a tough thing there. And then, you know, you got a lot more offense, and the Lakers needed more offense, but they also lost a lot of their defense. So you make life easier for LeBron and AD on one end, and you make it harder on the other. So, you know, how do they manage that trade-off as individual players? I think that I love what they did, but how the parts fit together is still gonna be a little tricky.
Andy, did you have a favorite addition out of all the people that they brought back other than Westbrook? Like, we're talking about, like, the role players.
I think Kendrick Nunn is, Brian touched on him. Just, he's a guy that can help them get some scoring punch off the bench, where I suspect he'll play. And that's something that they've lacked in terms of guys who can create their own shot and help create shots for other guys at a pretty equal level. They haven't really had that coming from the bench. That type of presence that I think can hopefully help that second unit. And again, you know, the minutes where LeBron's not there, you need guys who can, you know, help just keep things humming. And I think Nunn can be a part of that equation. I think Kent Bazemore is going to be really important for this team, because there's nobody that brings as much utility on both sides of the ball, at least in theory, as Bazemore. He's also pretty experienced. He's somebody that I expect is going to be a pretty big staple when it comes to the fourth quarter and closing out games. You know, that I think it's interesting, you know, with what Brian was talking about too, just the idea of the defensive integrity that they may have lost, but, you know, they punched up the offense. There may just be some calculations being made that ultimately, if they score enough, that defense they're losing just won't be as important. And the last couple of years, the league has moved in a very offensively driven direction. And especially if you're a team like the Lakers and you start picturing yourself in the finals, because that is the goal for this team, and you are facing perhaps the Brooklyn Nets, mm-hmm. who look like they could put up, you know, 170 in their sleep, it may be more about just, can you match them as opposed to, can you stop them? You know, how much can you slow them? The new step forward may really just be about, we need to be able to outscore whoever. And I think in some ways offset the idea that this is not Frank Vogel's strength. Like, Frank Vogel is an outstanding defensive coach. And I imagine that at the end of the season, we will see this group better defensively than they look on paper, because Vogel's just shown that that's something he can do. But even in his best years with the Pacers or the championship season with the Lakers, his offenses have tended to be middle of the road or even a little less than that. So he may be somebody that, whether for focus reasons, schematic, whatever, he needs a little more at his disposal just to offset what he does not naturally bring as a coach. And that may be part of the planning as well.
This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all of the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brands their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or a car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you could need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, and then write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Let's talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, but unlike most protein bars, it actually tastes good, and it's good for you. Built Bar is great for health-conscious men and women, whether you want to maintain or lose weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Built Bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, and high in fiber. They have plenty of delicious flavors available now. Coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. I'm not lying when I tell you I have 5 boxes of Built Bars in my apartment right now. I have mint brownie, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, and double chocolate, and I've really been enjoying the orange. If you don't have a favorite yet, you can get a mixed box where you'll get 2 each of 9 flavors. I highly recommend that to those of you who will be new to Built Bar. Not only is Built Bar the best tasting protein bar I've ever had, but it's healthy too. Check out these macros. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. This is perfect for every diet. Amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. Go to built.com, use that promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off on your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com.
It's an interesting point that you bring up about how the league is trending that way, and we consider the Brooklyn Nets the favorites to make it to the finals out of the East. And if the Lakers, you kind of have to figure, how are you going to score Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden? And the difference now is I think the league is trending in that direction. And you don't really need 5 good defenders anymore. You don't really need 4 good defenders anymore. Maybe it's enough just to have 2. And when LeBron and Anthony Davis are engaged, Anthony Davis is the guy we were talking about for Defensive Player of the Year early on last season, right? He was one of the favorites to potentially win that award. And then LeBron could still play at that level when he's engaged, and you would imagine he would be in the finals or in the playoffs. So maybe that's enough, right? Because you look at the Nets and they kind of had enough. You know, they didn't not get through Milwaukee because they couldn't play defense. They didn't not get through Milwaukee because they were missing their star players.
Anthony Davis is what ultimately makes any Laker defense or this defense,
like, really what we're talking about here.
Like when Anthony Davis is playing at the top of his game defensively, the entire defense changes, and he is arguably the most versatile, impactful defender in the league. So a lot of that is going to come down to him, and that level of engagement, his availability, and all that.
82 games. The question becomes, when you go up against good teams that have 7 games to scheme against you, what does that mean for the Lakers offensively? And then, you know, part of what makes Brooklyn so intimidating from a defensive standpoint is the feeling that you have to stop them on every trip. Like Andy says, like, you feel like you could put up 160, 170 points on you. And, you know, it creates an enormous pressure to feel like you get a stop every time and you score every time. And so you need to have an offense that at least in theory is capable of keeping up with that, because, you know, and the Lakers, I think in the last couple of seasons probably haven't, certainly not last year. And so I just, it, like you said, it's fascinating. And like, this is all predicated on finals or not finals, winning a title or not. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't think they're going to be good, and people who doubt the wisdom of the trade, who thinks it's too much, who think Westbrook isn't a good fit or whatever. They're going to be great before, because they had Anthony Davis and LeBron James. If everybody stayed healthy, they were going to be an outstanding team. They added Russell Westbrook. They didn't get worse. It's just a question of whether or not it's the right thing to do to win a title.
Well, that was kind of my next question, was, did the Lakers get better? And I know they're better. They're going to be better than last year because LeBron and Anthony Davis were hurt, kind of limping after that, you know, 2-minute offseason that they had. But my real question is, are they better than what they were when they won the championship in 2020? But so that was my question. I'm interested to hear your guys' takes on that. But I'm wondering if that's even the right question anymore. Do you necessarily have to be better than you were?
I was going to say, I don't want to punt on this, but it's really, really difficult to answer that question, because you're talking about two teams that are so oppositely built.
Right.
And, you know, the importing of Russell Westbrook is so specific that, you know, the answer could be, yeah, they actually are better. The answer could just as easily
I'll do
be,
that. No, I know. I am the one person.
This
who does.
Made it
I think,
more complicated than necessary.
I think they are. I think they are more
the things that really
talented on
help
paper,
the Lakers stand apart, like it,
with
it
a
is
better skill set
at this
in terms
moment,
of some of the things that you might need.
If you really want
the
honest
title,
answer, it's unanswerable right now.
Defensive.
Right. Like I don't think
you know, you
anybody.
Look at the
there's going to be a lot of people
I mean,
throwing out answers.
There's still
none of them actually.
My daughter's decided to join the conversation. There's a lot of conversation now is whether or not.
But Brian's an idiot. I mean, you got to remember
little things like that can make a big difference in terms of what they look like and the versatility that they have defensively. But, you know, they have more shooting or people that should be reliable. They got a little bit lucky in the bubble at the guys who stepped, like Markieff Morris didn't hit a shot outside of Orlando as a Laker. You know, but he did then. And, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope got really hot. And like, they got good timely shooting in the bubble when they needed it. And it's, they shouldn't have to pray for as much of that this year. You know, you have Wayne Ellington as a professional shooter on your roster. They just have more of that stuff. I like their ball handling more. I like their versatility more. The only thing I don't like more about this team compared to the other one is defense. But the defense was such a massive part of what they did that it's hard to know for sure how much of a difference that makes. And, you know, the league is different. And I think the Lakers benefit because outside maybe Phoenix, mm-hmm. I don't. You know, with Jamal Murray out right now in Denver, with Kawhi Leonard out in with the Clippers, you know, the Warriors have a bunch of question marks. I don't know who the other elite teams are, at least in the West. So I think they'll get to the finals. And I think they're better equipped from a raw talent standpoint when they get there. But the Nets are a different deal than, you know, if it's them. I think, you know, Milwaukee is a different deal. And I don't know how much it really depends on how much they lose defensively.
Yeah. That's why I say I don't even know if the right question was whether or not they are better than they were a couple of years ago, or if the real question is, are they a better matchup for the team that they're probably going to meet in the finals if they make it that far? And I guess that's the calculus that they did and kind of led them to making the moves that they made.
Phoenix,
final question for you guys. You mentioned some of the teams there, Brian, who are maybe near the top of the Western Conference, but who do you guys view as the biggest?
It's hard for me to believe those guys off
to the Lakers in the West.
For the time being, I'm going to say Phoenix because A, I think they're really good, and B, I know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know what type of team they are. I know how they're built. I think they don't have the same explosive potential as the Lakers at their absolute best, the way you could imagine them. But they're a team that's really well built, and they don't have a lot of weaknesses. Like you don't look at Phoenix and say, okay, these three areas are the three obvious areas that you would look to exploit, and they're glaring. You know, I mean, they may not be able to overwhelm
right, but that
you
said,
in
I,
talent
I
the way
Davis
certain
doesn't
other
get
teams
last year,
the league are.
I think the Lakers
but
would have
just,
Phoenix.
I think
so it's
very
like,
well coached. They're very
I don't,
well
that's part of my
They've
calculus in not objecting
they're going to
as
have
much
a lot
or
of
worrying as much about the Westbrook
again,
thing, at least
in
for
terms
now.
In terms of the way the West
is,
sits
I,
right
I
now,
I don't know who's better than that.
They're one of the
you
few
know,
teams
they should
that you
be the best team in the
know
conference.
Who they are.
And
so
they have a lot of time
team,
to figure it out.
Suns.
So we'll see. I mean, I agree Phoenix is probably the next best team. I think Utah is still very good. I hope Denver is good because I love that sort of, I just love how they play. But I don't think anybody's better. Nobody should be better right now than the Lakers if everybody's healthy and, you know, it's just not a total disaster.
I have to agree with you guys. I just think that the talent that they have there on paper, like you guys mentioned, is just whether or not Frank Vogel and LeBron James can make everything work. But Warriors fans will get a chance to see the Lakers really early in that process. In fact, it'll be their first, both teams' first game of the season, opening night, Lakers Warriors at Staples Center. Very much looking forward to that. We still got a few more weeks to go before opening night. Brian, Andy, thanks so much for joining me. You can find them over at Locked On Lakers. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for today. Make sure to tune in later this week when we break down the Grizzlies, Suns, and Pelicans. And make sure to subscribe to stay on top of all the new episodes. Thanks for listening.